Hello, and welcome to VentureCast. I'm David Hornick of August Capital.
And I'm Howard Hartenbaum, also of August Capital.
And Howard has been giving me crap this morning, calling this the David Hornick Show, which I don't think is fair, because Howard is talking just as much as I am. Now, don't be that way. Is that what you're going to do this whole show?
You told me you pay me by the word, and you've only got a budget of $38.
Yeah, but I didn't tell you how much I'd pay you per word, yeah. So you can keep up all the words you want.
We'll negotiate that later.
Welcome to the Howard Hartenbaum Show.
That's not going to happen.
With your guest co-host, David Hornick.
Man. So what do you want to talk about today?
So we just had this big party at our office. We call it the August Annual, but it's a little confusing because it's not in August.
So I called in for a board meeting to be an observer at this company nearby now. And on the board is Josh Goldman from Norwest and Emily Melton, who's at DFJ and moving to Mayfield. Congratulations, Emily. And the CEO and Mike Linton, who is the outside board director. He used to be at eBay. He was their CMO. And Bill Draper was there as well. And I called in, and when I called in, everybody was already like, oh, Howard, thanks for the – oh, there's a great party. The August Annual was fantastic. And the CEO goes, what party?
So every single one of them.
Everybody except the CEO. And I was like, oh, crap. So I pulled up. I was the only guy calling. I pulled up the list, and we did invite him.
Yeah, we had spam folder.
We had a
problems.
Lot of spam folder. So I – you know, said to him, check your spam filter, and he was like, oh, okay, but it was just terrible. So next year, if we send out stuff, if we don't see delivery...
we need delivery confirmation.
Delivery confirmation or that it was open, we'll have to call. It was terribly embarrassing. It was like dead silence. Like, what party?
Well, I got an email from Mike Arrington saying, am I off the list? Like, what happened?
No, he hit spam too.
Yeah, and so it's terrible.
And you don't want to piss him off.
No, please, Arrington, you were on the list. I'll bring you the list. I'll show you. I had you on the list. I swear.
Yeah.
So anyway, but it was good. It was fun. It's funny, you know, so we talk about process improvements in our companies all the time. Like, oh, there are ways to make the workflow make more sense and it brings people in more quickly into websites, etc. But I haven't seen a better example of that, the physical workflow change, than last party, where we changed where people came in and we put up a shade for the sun. All these like stupid physical changes that you think were completely irrelevant.
So the big trick is, and people come in the front door and then they don't move in and it crowds. So the trick is you put the bar as far away as possible. So people come in the front door and then they're like, they want to get a drink, and it pulls them all the way through the entire venue
like
to get
a
the drinks.
Moth to light.
Which is where all
they
the drinks
They just
were.
Keep going, right?
And it
keep
worked
going,
perfectly. We had good going. Distribution and there was no crowding at the front because the bar was at the other end.
It was good. This is important stuff. I'm telling you, those of you listening who are thinking, like, why does this matter? It does. It made a huge difference.
Yeah. There was a lot of handshaking, and I was, you know, I'm kind of one of those hypochondriac handshaking, and I was kind of washing my hands at the end three times over.
That's funny, because I went home and I was feeling sick. Maybe I got something.
Not me. I feel great.
Who do you think gave it to me?
There was probably 100 people there who were sick.
Probably. At least.
Yeah, but not me. So we have flu shots in our building in October. You know that?
Oh, sweet.
You pay $22 bucks and they shoot you in the arm.
You know, they. I just read a thing that said that the H1N1 vaccine, that they thought you were going to have to take two shots for it to be effective, that they think it now will only require one.
Yeah, twice as many people, twice as fast.
Exactly, that's good.
So I'm not going to do it.
Are you one of these anti...
No. Once I had a shot before and I got this huge reaction from some ingredient in it, made my skin like all red or something. And so I'm always afraid of shots.
Did you at least immunize your children?
Yeah.
All right, good. Because that makes me crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm worried and I'm not going to immunize you're endangering the population of the human race by not immunizing your children from these diseases that we can eradicate.
Yeah.
That's my feeling, Howard.
No, I'm pro immunization. It's just I'm afraid of like the flu shots, because once I had the shot and my whole arm got swollen and red and hot.
That's so sad for you.
They said next time maybe you could die, and your answer would be get some life insurance.
Yeah. Well, you have a lovely family. I'm sure you have life insurance, because I think you want to take care of them. That's my sense.
Yes, I of course I do. Okay. I love you, my wife.
Okay, good. You just never know.
Even though she doesn't even know the show exists.
Oh, really? See, my wife knows. She just intentionally would never listen. So the only person who I mention who always is listening is my mother, who I mention a lot. Hello, Mom. I know you're listening. You can pretend all you want. She doesn't even pretend, actually. She'll say, I enjoyed that conversation of the immunizations.
David has a nice picture of you on his desk.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Mom, you can rest assured that David thinks about you every day.
Thank you, Howard.
Moving on.
So the thing I like about the August annual, the thing I like about it is that, so originally we did have it in August, but the problem with having it in August was people were still on vacation, you couldn't get them, etc. And so we moved it to right at the end after August, the beginning of September. And what I think it's become is sort of this, get back to work, end of summer party, right? People come together and they, oh, what are you working on? It's a very energetic time for the entrepreneur and venture business because people are really psyched to be like refocusing their businesses and, you know, retail businesses, it's coming up on their big season, and advertising businesses, it's their big season. I mean, just everything kind of culminates in Q4 of the year. And so, so it was good. I mean, I think we had like 600 people, six or 700 people.
But the kudos go to a friend of ours, a guy named Ryota Matsuzaki, who works at Rakuten in Japan. If you don't know Rakuten, they're an $8 billion market cap e-commerce company in Japan. They have online trading platform and 35,000 storefronts.
Wow. Physical storefronts.
Yeah. Okay. Basically, it's like an eBay stores, but
eBay
it's not
store,
an auction
Yahoo
mechanism.
Stores, but it's for,
so these guys are huge, $500 million a year in profit or whatever, and he is their kind of BD corp dev guy. And I invited him to the lobby, having no expectation that he would
August
come.
August annual. Did invite him to the lobby, but did. Why isn't he coming?
I think he might be.
Oh, good. Well, he better email me.
Oh, or maybe he's not. So August annual was Wednesday night. He showed up Wednesday morning. He
showed up from where? Flew in from Tokyo.
And he came to the party, and he was the last guy here because he was on Japan time, and it was already daytime over there.
Yep.
So I think you had to escort him out at the very end.
I was hanging out with him, walked him to the front.
Thursday morning, he got back in a plane and flew back to Tokyo. So if we give a prize for the guy who flew the farthest for the shortest time to enjoy the hospitality, it was very nice to see him.
Exactly. And on the opposite end of the spectrum, anyone from Benchmark who walked down the stairs...
or it was too much trouble to walk down the stairs.
Yeah, even worse. What's all that noise downstairs? Oh, that's the party you're supposed to be going to. Nah, forget it.
It's too far.
Yeah, no, he's heroic. That's an impressive thing.
So if that's like the attitude of the executives at that company works hard.
Mm.
So.
Well, seriously, no. I've been trying to discuss this with my children, the importance of working hard. I think people underestimate the importance of working hard. I think they overestimate often the importance of being smart. And smart's great, like, you know, but I think smart's sort of the table stakes. Like, okay, you're smart, great. Now work hard. Like, I don't want to hear about that. So I haven't convinced my children necessarily, at least not the lazier of them.
So I would argue that a lot of success relies on luck. But you make your own luck, and one way you can make luck is by working hard.
That's right. No, exactly. If you can live two years in a year, then you have twice as much opportunity to run into luck, right?
If you sit on your butt and you wait for stuff to come to you, it's probably not going to happen. But if you get off your butt and you work hard and you run around, you're much more like a sales guys. Don't sit behind their desks and wait for sales. They get up, they call people, they go to conferences, they meet people, and the guys that work hard make money.
Yeah, I think that's right. At least that's what I tell myself when I have another night of not sleeping.
Yeah.
When I get to the venture business, I thought like, oh, sweet. I can, you know, work 9 to 5.
And you
it
do.
It doesn't work that way, does it? Well, no, that's true. I work
9 a.m.
to
5 a.m.
I work 9 to 5. Then I go home and I hang out with my kids and then I work from 10 to 2.
So there's some small percentage of the population who, like David Hornick and Bill Clinton, who literally can survive well on 4 hours or 5 hours of sleep per night. And most people in the population cannot do that. But if you look at many very successful peoples.
That's right. Groups of people.
People. That's a better word. Like, you know, presidents and prime ministers of countries and very successful, you know, large company executives, an extremely high percentage of them are the type of people who don't need all that much sleep to perform.
I view it as sort of lucky because if I did need that sleep, then I'd have to decide between spending time with my children or working. And I think that
would be
tough.
And you love your children.
And I do love my children, and that would be a tough choice. So yeah. I think the fact that I can, you know, hang out and spend time with my kids and then work all night is great. Yeah. But I think it was just sort of, I mean, you know, I was a lawyer. So when you're a corporate lawyer, it's like, well, and the litigator before that, like, you just, yeah. you work as much as you have to work.
Yeah, so, you know, one guy is going to be working really hard is Brad Garlinghouse.
That's right.
So he is, if you don't know Brad, he was an infamous guy at Yahoo and wrote the Peanut Butter Manifesto, basically describing how Yahoo was spread a little bit thin. And
I've known him. But it was. But here's the thing about the Peanut Butter Manifesto. It was in the spirit of positive, of constructive criticism, right? It wasn't like
it was a great management.
Sucks. Yeah. We're cold. This and we're.
But he was
dead.
Trying to motivate
it was like,
people.
Come on, people! Here's what we got going. Anyway. So you were saying.
Anyway, we've known Brad for years, and I met Brad when we were just launching Skype. A very sharp guy. He was an entrepreneur. He built some companies. He worked at Yahoo for a long time, and now he's at AOL, and he is going to be working hard because when you get a guy like that who really understands the industry and is going into an organization and building out some new stuff, I bet he works 20-hour days for the next year.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, what's interesting, what is interesting about AOL is – you know, look at, they've got some really smart new guys in there, and you look at them and go, okay, here's a property that has a pile of assets that could be really interesting with the right guys focused on it. And now they have the right guys. And, you know, so it's just interesting to watch the ins and outs of the industry. Like, if you had said a few years ago, oh, you know, Microsoft is going to kind of relaunch a search engine, it would feel, and there'd be a bunch of energy behind it, and, you know, people would be feeling pretty good about Microsoft's web strategy. You know, people would say, oh, really? Come on, you know, it's Microsoft. But I would say that the sentiment right now is exactly that. Like, people are pretty energized about what Microsoft is doing and how they're thinking about the web, and they're making a bunch of progress. And now you got AOL with some really smart guys at the helm. And so these, you know, your fortunes can shift here in tech land.
And so all the people.
All about the people.
Speaking of people.
Well, no, exactly. I mean, we had a conversation before we started this show about my good friend Dick Costolo. And Howard had a whole lot of penis jokes he was hoping to insert in this.
But I'm sure Dick has heard them all. My favorite one was, we were just going to call you Richard the entire show.
Yeah, just, you know, for the censors, because yes. we can't have VentureCast be put on the watch list.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think the fact that Dick is joining Twitter is huge, and. You know, I knew that Dick was moving out to the West Coast, but he was pretending like, oh, I finally convinced my wife that it was nice out here. You know, he gave me this is the thing, like, maybe he's not maybe I think Dick's like this good friend of mine, and then, but he gave me this whole line that he was.
But you think
out.
Everybody's your friend?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, only the people who are. I have lots of friends. Are you not my friend? What are you trying to tell me? No, I love Dick.
That's
Costolo.
Called lighting him up and walking him in.
No, like Dick's, but yeah. No, I'm good friends with Dick.
If you don't know Dick, like, he is a very fun guy. He is really fun.
Dick's an awesome guy, but yeah. Here's the thing. This is unfortunate for entrepreneurs who don't live in the Bay Area, because I used to always use Dick Costolo as the example of the guy who could live in another city yet appear to live in Silicon Valley and know everybody and be engaged and be connected, and that you could do it, that you could be an entrepreneur somewhere else and still have that kind of connection with the tech community here in the Bay Area. And you know what?
And he has such a great connection, he's now CEO of Twitter.
Yeah.
So evidently it does work.
It does work. However, now
he has to move.
Living in the Bay Area. So welcome to the Bay Area, Mr. Costolo, and I think what's interesting, obviously, is Dick created and ran FeedBurner before this. He understands monetization, so I think, you know, we can all rest assured. Have those of you who are deeply concerned that Twitter won't monetize its incredible traffic, have no fear. Dick Costolo is here. What's the? I can't sing the song.
Good.
No, now I'm going to have to.
I don't know what song you're thinking of.
I don't know. I can't come up with that.
Costello is here to save the day.
Exactly. Oh, now I've got Howard singing.
Great.
That's awesome. Anyway, so.
How did you trick me into that?
That was awesome. So we got Dick. We got Garlinghouse. What, you know, anyone else on the move? No.
I mean, on the venture side, maybe a month or so ago, who moved?
Well, so we can talk about Emily. This is sort of interesting, right?
Yeah, I mean, okay.
Emily's sort of young hotshot over at DFJ, and she's moving over to join the team at Mayfield. And, you know, these moves don't actually happen that often in the venture business, right? I mean, they happen occasionally, but usually, you know, you have good, solid venture firms and teams, and they stay together. And so, but anyway, I don't think it's an indicator of one thing or the other than that people
really
like it.
You don't see it all that often.
Oh, here's a thought, though. Oh, all right, we'll talk about that. Mm. Then I'll come back to it. But you're right. Why do you think that is? Why is it that you don't have a lot of these people moving around in the venture world, right?
It's relationships.
I guess that's right. I mean, it's a partnership, and so it's hard enough. I mean, here's the thing about partnerships. Anyone who's been in a partnership knows that partnerships are hard, right? They're as much as you like your partners, and I love my partners, and they love me, I'm sure, right? This is when you say right.
Right.
Okay. You know, it's a relationship. It's like a family or a marriage or whatever. Insert relationship here. And so if you have something that's working, that's like a tricky – that's a tricky dynamic, and then to find a new set of people who you feel good about joining, et cetera, and you're going to hitch your future to that group of people, et cetera. I mean, that's no small move. So it's not that surprising to me that it doesn't happen that often. Actually, the thing that's surprising to me is that anyone ever joins an existing firm, right? Like, how in the world did we come to the conclusion that you should join us in this partnership? That seems like madness.
I'm sure they were thinking the same thing when you joined.
No, way more so when I joined.
So the other guy I was thinking of recently was Gideon Wu, who joined Coastal Ventures.
Yeah, well, that's sort of interesting, isn't it?
He was CFO at Facebook beforehand. And really nice guy.
I don't know Gideon, but I've heard nothing but good things about him. He's very smart. But it's interesting because Gideon isn't.
I see a co-investment with Coastal Ventures in our future.
Good, let's do that. Except that Coastal does these kind of clean techy things, and Gideon's.
They have the early stage stuff.
Do they other stuff? Because I mean, Gideon—that's not really Gideon's focus, right?
I think that their new fund that they just raised is now the largest fund, venture fund this year. It's over $1 billion.
$1 billion.
Yeah.
Man, oh man, dwarfing our mere $600 million.
Yeah.
650. What was it?
651.
Yeah, excuse me. Do I hear 652?
Sold. That bid cost you.
Did you notice, by the way, that there were like a million pregnant women at our party at the August annual?
No.
You didn't? It was interesting. Like a whole bunch of my friends in the industry who
it's
were women
time.
Were pregnant.
No, wait, I always get in fall. Trouble when I start saying these things. So, no, I didn't notice any pregnant women at the party.
Okay. I mean, I thought it was exciting. Obviously, I have four kids. I like babies. But it was just interesting to see because very rarely. So, first of all, in tech events, they tend to be very male heavy. And I'd say that the August annual, it does a pretty good job of having lots of women from the industry. But you rarely, it's just this interestingly, rarely see pregnant professional women. It's just not for whatever reason. And yet.
Why? Because you think they hide it or they just don't go out?
No, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's by the time you're pregnant, you're not in the industry or whatever. Yeah.
Emily has 2 weeks to go.
Six or seven women.
Yeah.
At the
full term pregnant.
Yeah, like very pregnant.
I was hoping one would be born right there and then we could name it like Augustus. Or Augustine.
Yeah, that would have been awesome. No, we didn't have that. But we did have a couple who were a couple weeks away and they were.
Yeah,
they were. It was hard. You know, it was a good thing it wasn't too crowded. Would have been hard to get too close.
So, are you saying that with the demise of the economic cycle, and people just basically didn't have as much money to run around and go spend on travel and entertainment, instead they stayed home and.
No, I wasn't. I mean, that's an interesting theory.
We may have an increase in the birth rate as people, and they, like that story, you know, from some big blackout in New York City a long time ago.
Oh, where that had a huge lot of babies.
So maybe the economic cycle is going to produce, it's self-healing because people stop spending money, they stay home, they make babies. A year later, they make a baby. 20 years later, the economy is all fixed because we've got all these new workers.
Sweet.
So invest in things related to babies now.
I wasn't actually saying that, but that's an interesting
It's an interesting theory, Howard,
and I like it. It's very nice.
Speaking of investment trends, so I've been fascinated with all the stuff about robots lately. I mean, I was a mechanical engineer.
All right, so this is just something you like.
This is, and I went to MIT, and to be a mechanical engineer at MIT, you have to take part in this 270 contest.
Yeah, 270
is awesome. You build a battle robot, basically. They give you a box of crap.
It's not a battle, though, right? It's like you have to figure it. There's some task.
It's a competitive task.
Right, but do you have a task ahead of time, or?
So what they do is they give you a box, and all the stuff in the box has been donated, and there'll be springs and wires and motors and wood and toilet paper rolls and all sorts of random stuff in the box, and you're only allowed to use that stuff in the box except for glue. I mean, if you want a screw, you like got to make your own screw kind of thing. That way you can't like take 10,000 screws and make a counterweight with it. And then there's a task. In the year that I did it, there was a big table of styrofoam pellets, and you started up at a like a springboard above the table, and then when it started, both your item and your competitor's item dropped to the table. You had to rush to the middle and grab the ball and push it onto your competitor's side and keep it there through this 30 or 60 second cycle. I don't remember, maybe it was 30 seconds. And whoever's side it's on is the loser. And so it's a task, but there's some competition to it. And I noticed lately...
how'd you do?
I did quite well, actually. I got number 2.
Wow!
Which made me on TV.
That is huge.
Which was pretty good. And I had one of the simplest designs, which generally simplicity is a good thing in design. I didn't get number 1, and the number 1 design was quite similar to mine, but evidently better.
Slightly better, yes, but ever so better.
I'll find the video somewhere and show you. It's pretty cool. So my dad started building these Bobot programmable robots with my kids. You build a physical robot, and then you teach the kids simple basic, and you teach them how to program the robot. And then I noticed on TechCrunch this great article about this startup company that the founder of iRobot has done that. Amazon and some unnamed, big-name Boston VC had invested in. And there was a cool video about pick-and-ship robots in a factory warehouse. And then I went to this Nokia Ideas Camp that Valerie Buckingham had set up 2 weekends ago, and 3 guys brought these battle robots, and they were serious robots, like 50, 60 pounds each. Lots of metal, pounding, you know, hammers to destroy the competition.
Well, did you ever watch Robot Wars? I mean, these are Robot Wars.
I don't watch TV.
Oh, well, you should, because on Discovery Channel or whatever, they have Robot Wars, and it's exactly this. It's like these giant things, and they have cutting and smashing. And
so I think it is a fantastic thing, because people are building stuff. It's not just a piece of software that moves bits around on the screen, but they're building these items. Physical items, there's, you know, a lot more hardware engineering that goes into it, structural engineering, all sorts of design work, all sorts of software work, fancy creativity that go into these things. And if this is a popular thing, I would say the future is very bright for a lot of industrial robotics and maybe home robotics. I think it's an interesting area.
No, that stuff will be cool. I mean, look at, if you had asked someone, will Roomba be an interesting product and sell millions of units, people, that's ridiculous. Have this little disc that's zipping around your house, sweeping it up, and yet it's been a wildly successful product for iRobot. And, you know, here's iRobot, a company that got started to do military robots and still does, these military robots that go in and either do reconnaissance or actually can, you know, do sort of more dramatic things. And then you have Roomba that sweeps up the room. But I do think I think the other thing that's interesting about these is that not only is it these physical robots that are cool, but it's that they have this integrated software experience that makes the huge difference, right? The capacity to have really, you know, lots of sensors and lots of intelligence built into these things that's changing things. And I look at, frankly, all of the kind of physical device design now is as much a software delivery experience as it is a hardware experience. Obviously, the iPhone and the iPod are the best example of that. But, you know,
if they had little legs on them, they'd be really cool.
Yeah, right. You could just go, and it would run over to you.
You can buy, you know, expensive toys on the internet now, which are basically robots, and they're in your house, and you can control them over your Wi-Fi from a remote location. You can sit at work, and you can make the robot go across the house and harass your pet, or take a picture, or start talking. And I mean, so robots, kind of neat. I hope to see more robot stuff.
Yeah, you're working on robots. Howard's your man. Did you ever see that?
Mr. Roboto.
Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto. And he speaks Japanese. That should be helpful.
I can say Mr. Roboto perfectly.
That's very nice, Howard.
Anyway.
But can you say... I can't come up with that. I've never heard you speak Japanese. Let's hear it. What do you got?
What do you want me to say?
I don't know. You have to come up with something. Say something interesting. I mean, you know.
これからの番組全部は日本語にしますので、あなたはどういうホストかって全然わかんないから、これから私のショーにするから。I basically said, you know, we're going to be using Japanese in all our future shows. I don't know what kind of hell of a host you're going to be in Japanese, so I'm going to take control of this or something.
Oh, good. So it's basically the Howard Hartenbaum show.
And I know how to swear in Japanese as well.
Howard-san show. Yes. I'm out. I'm completely out.
Yeah. The most common mistake made in Japanese is people, you put san as an honorific on somebody else's name, and you never put it on your own name. So you can always tell the real rookies when they come to Japan and they're introducing themselves to their Japanese host, and they say, hello, my name is David san. You're basically saying, I am the honorable, most important person in the room, Mr. David. It's always terribly embarrassing for all the Japanese, but I'm sure I did it myself when I was getting going.
I'm sure this happens. This happens. Well, there you go. But I didn't. I referred to you, which you are the most honorable
person in the room.
Exactly.
As I am.
The two of us sitting here.
Yes.
That's, you know, high bar there, Howard.
Yeah. Sorry.
All right. What else is happening? What else is happening that's worthy of discussion? Anything? I don't know.
I was having a chat with somebody earlier in the week about what would happen if we suddenly had lots more entrepreneurs. Like qualified, educated, smart, understood how to set up businesses, suddenly, you know, had all these great ideas and started pitching them to, I mean, there's enough money to go around on the investment side.
Yeah.
But if you suddenly had a lot more companies, what would kind of the outcome be? And I came to the thought that I don't think it wouldn't create lots more companies. It would probably create, it would create a lot more companies in the short term, but it would create less companies in the long term.
So you think there's sort of a zero-sum game of, you know, available total economic gain that could be sopped up by future startups?
I think it would I think it's worse than zero-sum game. I think actually the entrepreneurs on average would make less and the investors would make less because more money would be invested and there would be more companies that are overlapping and spending money. And as a result, those companies would be less likely to succeed, so the investments would be no good and the founders would be less likely to succeed and wouldn't make money from it. And maybe the number of successful big companies coming out of it would be less because you have five companies that are so similar fighting against each other and none really pulls away. And
so that sort of, I mean, it sort of happened right in the late 90s where it was so clear there was money to be made that people were starting all sorts of companies and suddenly there was, for every pets.com, there was petsmart.com and doggy.com and whatever else, right? Exactly. And so in the end, people did sort of cannibalize the markets and a bunch of things failed. And, you know, sure, the market crashed and that was a factor. But on the other hand,
but maybe that's why the market crashed.
But I think at the time people thought, well, less qualified entrepreneurs are coming to build these things, that people are focused on the money as opposed to the entrepreneurship. And so if we could truly produce a world full of a lot more qualified entrepreneurs, people who are excited about company building and focused on company building, maybe they wouldn't have, go for the same things. Maybe they would expand the pie and say, oh, well, robots are interesting. Let me approach this robot question. And
But there are robot companies that are starting up.
Yeah, but good. So they could make a robot company dealing with yard robots, right? Instead of just doing the same thing, et cetera. And so
I have a yard robot. It's called my daughter who pushes a lawnmower.
Okay, well, that's one way to look at it.
I was thinking geographically it makes sense in that, you know, people are trying to build companies that basically cover all needs for the whole world. A search engine that the entire country or the entire world can use. But I'm sure that the needs of people in cold weather climates versus warm weather climates are very different. And you could have companies that are started in Minneapolis that would never be started here, and they could be very successful in the northern half of the U.S. and northern Europe or whatever, that don't get started because there's no infrastructure for financing there. So I was thinking, if there's a lot of more entrepreneurs starting things, providing that they were geographically spread out, if they're all started here in Silicon Valley, I think would be bad.
Right. But so we just need to have them. And I agree with you. Like, one of the things that's interesting when you see startups from other parts of the country and the world is that they're influenced by the places that they come from. And so if you live in and around John Deere and John Deere factories and understanding that kind of big equipment, then you'll know things that might be interesting, commercially interesting opportunities that you and I have no clue about. Like, you know, I don't know anything about commercial tractors or whatever, but so there are, you know, hundreds and thousands of industries that Silicon Valley doesn't know anything about but could be well served by innovation. So I think that's interesting. And then this idea of the world, like, you know, there are all sorts of things.
Mobile banking in India. Maybe it won't be important here because we all have bank accounts, but in India they don't have credit cards, they don't have bank accounts, and they have mobile phones, and there's some way of making that work.
Exactly. And so,
but they shouldn't expect it's going to take over here.
And so one of the problems we've had in mobile is that we've made this mistake, right? Like, oh, Americans trying to figure out how to do mobile, when meanwhile mobile's so much more important and prominent in other places in the world. And can we really export it from here to other places, or are we dealing with, you know, American uses of mobile, which may be fine, don't get me wrong, but, you know, I'm not convinced that I'm going to be able to fund a company that's going to be able to understand the needs of mobile needs of the Korean population.
Yeah, so the most innovative mobile product to hit the market, I would say, is the iPhone. But because of the platform in the App Store, people are building apps for it all over the world as it launches in new markets, and they're taking care of different needs in different markets, and some of them transfer and some of them don't. But it was founded here.
Well, yeah. Great. The platform was, but yeah, it's extensible, and so it so it may have the possibility, as can Android, to have, you know, sort of broader reach. Hmm. So back for one second to this idea of, you know, more entrepreneurs and growing global footprints and all. I was reading Brad Feld's blog, Feld Thoughts, today, and he pointed back to an earlier argument that Paul Graham made, Paul Graham from Y Combinator, about the idea that we really need in this country to allow visas for foreigners who want to come in and start companies, and that there should be basically an entrepreneur visa, that you should be, if you're going to come and start a company in this country, then you should be able to get a visa. You shouldn't have to go through all the rigmarole, and maybe it's not for a million people a year, but if you were to have, I think Brad says 10,000, you know, entrepreneur visas, founder visas, you know, think that would start another 10,000 companies or some fraction thereof, and that would be good for the economy.
And then you would have, you know, states and cities, whatever, competing for those people if they're moving here to get them, like we do see. You know, you see magazines sometimes and you're reading an article and you realize it's an advertisement from, we'll pick on Minneapolis today.
Right, exactly.
You know, Minneapolis is a great place to start a business, and here's all the great companies, and here's our worker demographic, and here's their cost, and here's our tax structure. And some guys are even, maybe I should open a company in Minneapolis. And you look at how there's grants that are made and tax exemptions, and you look at the Singaporean government. If you start a business, they'll just gift you a matching amount of any amount of money you raise from a private investor, which I think is fantastic.
And
I think
if the Canadian government does similar things with, you know, expense towards company building in Canada.
So I could imagine if there was this, you know, visa thing, you would see Minneapolis saying, come and set up your company here, and if you raise capital from a private investor that is then applied towards hiring people here, we will match it with tax money, which all comes back to them in taxes anyway from the process. And I think Paul's idea was great. And how do I vote for that?
Well, I guess Brad is actually chatting with some congressman about this, congressperson about it, and so, Brad, count us in the list of people who would be happy to come agree that this is a great idea and good for our economy and good for, you know, I mean, particularly in a time when there's so much consternation about immigration. Oh, our economy and the immigration. Like, this just has to be viewed differently. It's good for the country. It's good for entrepreneurship. So, so hopefully the idea will move forward. I think it would be pretty cool.
Yeah, if you pulled up the article that Brad wrote, and I like the comment here. It's making sure that the people that we're saying are starting a business actually, you know, have some background that would be relevant for that. Like having a degree from an accredited 4-year college anywhere in the world in computer science or engineering or whatever it may be. I don't think you have to restrict it down so much, but at least we're not saying, we'll give anybody who says they want to start a business can move here. I think there should be
some... Yeah, there's got to be a process, right?
Process behind it.
Yeah, no, Brad proposes either there's some panel of people who say, is this actually a business?
Or I volunteer, David, to be on the panel.
All right, I'm on. I would love to be on the panel. So far, it's me, Brad Feld, and Paul Graham. I don't know what that... I can tell you that is a panel that's just built for...
A lot of yeses.
For trouble. That would be good. So I was also reading... So I've started playing with Foursquare. It's great entrepreneur in the other day was chatting with me, a guy named Adam Rifkin. And Adam... as you know, has been at the front of a bunch of interesting trends, and we started talking for whatever reason about Foursquare, and I guess he is a fanatic about Foursquare. And Howard, you say you haven't yet put Foursquare on your iPhone, but you know, Foursquare is this kind of location-based thing. He's going to do it right now. Hang on. You know, it's this location-based thing, and you state where you are, and you can interact with other people on Foursquare, etc. And we discovered that actually August Capital is on Foursquare as a location. So I have just been named the mayor of August Capital, which is really why I had to get on Foursquare. It's like, who else could be? That would be rude. I might let Howard be mayor of August Capital. But
can I be the junior mayor?
Yes, vice mayor. It's like being the viceroy in Star Wars. But anyway, so I was reading Fred Wilson's blog, and Fred just seed funded Foursquare along with the O'Reilly Alpha Tech guys and some other smart people, and he was sort of lamenting in his blog the fact that he had already blogged before he funded them. He had blogged about how much he was sort of smitten with Foursquare and thought it was interesting and liked it, and then he decided to try to fund them, and he said that the financing was really competitive. And so his post is sort of like, you know, did I do myself a disservice by talking publicly about things that I was interested in before I funded them, and then thus sort of creating this interest in the company that resulted in more and more people giving them term sheets and driving up the price, etc.
Probably, except the fact that he said that he liked them and was willing to talk publicly about it may have been the reason why the founders went with him.
Yeah.
Or participate.
Well, I think it's probably one of them, right?
Bill Gurley does that a lot.
Right.
He likes a company and he gets excited about it even before he's invested. You'll see him blog about sometimes. So if you watch what he's blogging, I remember he got real excited about Skype before he even met them and he started blogging about them.
Yep.
And the founders like called him up and said, "Hey, you're pretty cool. You're blogging about my company." He's like, "That was what I wanted."
Oh, so basically I should start blogging about things I'm interested in. Is that what you're telling me? Is that the strategy I've been missing?
I like that company, Bump.
I do too, Howard.
I never thought I would be interested in something that, like, as a business that's making an iPhone app. But I like the physical interaction. Bump is this software you put on your iPhone, and you turn on the software, and you physically bump hands like Obama does with his wife. And you can transfer information back and forth between your phone, like contacts or pictures or whatever. And the physical interaction and the feedback, you know, the accelerometer and the timing makes it identify phones. And this physical, you know, vibration, the haptic response you get in this phone for doing it. I mean, I was an ergonomics engineer in Honda and a car company for a while. And I actually think what they've done is really materially different from... People say, well, you can just transfer information by pressing a button and exchange. Yeah. But the fact that you physically bump... Even though we're all worried about catching swine flu, there's no swine flu from bumping.
Exactly.
That just interests me. And interesting team, interesting guys.
No, that's cool.
So if you haven't tried it, try it out.
Yeah, and actually, you know,
I'll bump you.
What's interesting?
I'll
actually
bump anybody.
What do you think? Oh, great! That's all we need. As long as it's bumping, Howard. No, I was watching an iPhone commercial recently, and they have bump on the iPhone commercial, and I think it's interesting. Apple is definitely able to make applications interesting and prominent by featuring them on their, you know, there's an app for that, commercials. And so
their whole screening mechanism is very obvious. It's they pick stuff that is fun, it's easy to use, and it highlights the special capabilities of the phone.
Which is great. No, it's great for Bump. It's great for Apple. I mean, I think it's cool.
They're not highlighting some mobile search company.
No, exactly. Not anything. And, you know, so I will say, here I am. I keep getting notifications now about who's where on Foursquare. My pocket keeps vibrating.
There's been a bunch of companies that tried to do that with a downloaded app and did not do. I think Plista was one of those in Germany that was then bought by Nokia for a few tens of millions of dollars type of deal.
There you go. That's good.
But it just didn't get the adoption they wanted. They would identify Wi-Fi base stations where people were at, and then when other people went to them, you could find out where they were, and you could say who your friends and who are not your friends. You know where your friends were. It's a little bit different. There's a lot more gaming theory put into Foursquare with stuff like, you know, you're early on,
badges,
you get recognition
and
badges and all that. So I think it's a much more advanced version of it. But it has been tried and even turned into some, I think it was Plista, turned into acquisitions for people in the past. So
maybe
Foursquare's future is bright.
Well, there you go. There you go.
So David's saying he's very interested in Foursquares.
and Bump.
And he's the mayor of himself.
I am the mayor of I'm the mayor of my home.
It's so like being king of the dipshits.
Wait a second. I think this has taken an ugly turn. I don't think that's
I think you're going to be cutting this part out too.
Yeah, I'm going to cut it out. That's right. You're done. This piece. Yeah. I think that's enough. Frankly.
I think we've been going. It's probably like lunchtime. I'm getting hungry. I didn't have my second breakfast
today.
Where
are you going? Where are you going to lunch?
Probably the same place you're going. My favorite Japanese restaurant outside of the country of Japan is walking distance from my office, called Keigetsu. And it is real Japanese chefs, real food, very high quality stuff. It ain't cheap, but it's good.
It is good.
And if you want to have a romantic dinner in a real Japanese restaurant, it is the place to go. If you want to have an excellent, high quality, healthy business lunch, Keigetsu is the place for you.
Except that you'll almost assuredly bump into either me or Howard.
Or both.
Or both, as is the case
and
today.
I am not promoting this. I have no intent to invest in this company, nor am I a shareholder with any
benefit. No, but you
benefit.
Are promoting it because I love Keigetsu.
But
it's
sometimes
delicious.
Promoting your favorite restaurant is bad because it gets too crowded.
And we can't get a
However,
reservation.
But keeping them promoted and well-staffed keeps them a good restaurant.
Well, I will see you there, Howard.
Yes.
Have a good lunch.
I will see you all there at Keigetsu.
On Sand Hill Road. And until next time.
It's in Sharon Park. Sharon Park.
Until next time. I don't know. We don't have a tagline to close the show, so it just sort of rambles to
Good morning, Vietnam.
Yeah, that's not it. All right. Then how about just bye-bye.